Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about faith, family, freedom, the state of Illinois, our nation, and conservative action. Here's David Smith and Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. I'm Monty Larrick. The Illinois Family Institute recently had the privilege to hold our 2018 Worldview Conference at Jubilee Bible Church in Medina, Illinois. And thanks to keynote speaker John Stone Street, the conference was informative, thought-provoking, and an encouraging reminder that the gospel message offers hope for our nation and the world. Mr. Stone Street is the president of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. His breakpoint commentaries are heard on over 1,200 radio affiliates. Following his worldview presentation, Mr. Stone Street took questions from the audience and me, addressing issues about pending Supreme Court rulings, division in our country, Facebook, and even Kanye West. At the Supreme Court, justices are expected to rule soon on a California law that requires Christian-based facilities that steer pregnant women away from abortion to post notices about the availability of state-subsidized abortions. The ruling could impact legislation signed into law by Governor Rauner that forces doctors, medical professionals, and pregnancy care centers in Illinois to give referrals for abortions. And the High Court will be ruling on Cake Baker Jack Phillips. Justices will determine whether the government can compel a U.S. citizen to violate his conscience and participate in speech with which he fundamentally disagrees and that violates his sincerely held religious beliefs.
Both of these cross the line. It's one thing to say you can't live out your deeply held beliefs. It's another thing to say you have to act in violation of them. And both of these cases would do that. We have every reason right now to hope that the mandated kind of abortion services promotion, the state basically is forcing you to promote their services, that that's going to be ruled unconstitutional. The oral arguments really went well. I thought he did. The ADF attorney did a great job with that, and even Sotomayor was kind of bothered by it, right? So that's a good sign. But of course, oral arguments are sometimes indications; they never are the predictions. What is it? Past performance is no predictor of future performance, or something like that. As in stocks, so is in SCOTUS. So there you go. And then, of course, Jack Phillips. That's the most important religious freedom case of our lifetime. Too many of us think religious freedom is freedom of worship. This is what Chuck talked about. Colson, he used to talk about this, and that is freedom of worship is the ability to believe what you want according to, in your own house of worship, home, or in your own head. Russia has always had that. Cuba has that. That's not religious freedom. Religious freedom is the ability to take those deeply held convictions into your public lives. And too many churches, frankly, too many pastors have said, hey, if somebody forces me to do a same-sex marriage, I'll say no. And then they don't do anything to support the bakers, the photographers in their pews. So it's okay for you not to be forced to participate in same-sex weddings, but the person in your pew, because he doesn't have a quote-unquote sacred job, that he has to participate? Come on. No, that's a violation of what we know to be true about calling, about Christian worldview, about vocation. It's kind of Gnostic, frankly. And so that's why it's really important. We all need to certainly pray for it. That's what we can do. And I think we need to talk about it. I think we need to talk about it with our friends and neighbors, help them understand what's true about these cases. Jack Phillips did not kick anyone out of his store. Jack Phillips did not refuse to serve gay people. In fact, the day of the oral argument, the oral argument was on Tuesday. On Sunday in the Colorado Springs paper, they were running a whole series of point counterpoints on that case in the Colorado papers. There was an article with a point counterpoint, and the supporter of Jack Phillips was a guy named Mike Jones. Does that ring a bell for anybody? I didn't think it would. I didn't remember him until he mentioned who he was. Mike Jones, if you remember the Ted Haggard story, Ted Haggard got in trouble for soliciting a gay masseuse. Mike Jones was the gay masseuse. And Mike Jones came out in support of Jack Phillips. He actually signed it off and said, I've lost a lot of friends for supporting my friend Jack Phillips, but I'm proud to call him my friend. When he heard the case, he went over to the shop and went in. He said, I'm gay. And Jack Phillips said, well, great, how can I help you? And they became friends. They hugged now. So it's just not the story you've heard. And I think we all owe it to our brother in Christ to defend that story. Tell the truth. So anyway, what other questions do you have?
All right, here's a question right here.
Yes, I have a question about Colorado. In Colorado, there's a Republican attorney, Attorney General. I think her name's Cynthia Kaufman.
Yep.
And she's involved in the arguments in some of these cases concerning religious liberty. And my understanding is that she has taken a line against religious liberty.
Well, that's probably Jack Phillips.
Could be it, but she's arguing on behalf of Colorado.
On behalf of Colorado. Well, yeah, she actually didn't show up. It was the Assistant Solicitor General that showed up at the Supreme Court at Jack Phillips' case, and Justice Kennedy, of all people, really smacked him down. It was according to ADF in the courtroom that Justice Kennedy really actually kind of came out of his seat and yelled about how they had treated Jack Phillips. That's what he said. You did not treat Jack Phillips' religious views with respect. That's what he said in the oral arguments. So that's really good news. Well, I don't know her personally. I know someone who knows the person who argued on her behalf, and he was apparently kind of embarrassed that he had to do that. If that's who I'm thinking of, but I'm not sure I know all the players on that side.
In regards to all the cases that will be brought to the Supreme Court regarding your religious convictions being a business owner, if I were a gay person and walked into a friend's cake shop and asked for a cake and they said no, but let me give you another suggestion, I'm most likely to take the other suggestion in respect. Are some of these like set up, or is that prompted? If you understand what I'm trying to ask.
Yeah, is this a setup? Yeah, the answer for Baron L. Stutzman was no, it was actually a friend. The answer for Jack Phillips is, that's a good question. Not sure. It's weird. They would say no. But is it happening all over the place? Oh my goodness, yes. And you will be targeted. So if you have a wedding-related business and people know that you're a person of faith, there's a systemization about this. There is some intentionality. So the time to plan for this and to figure out what you're going to do and to come up with a strategy is not after it happens. I had a friend who runs a bake shop in Colorado, and his strategy was, he thought about this for a while. He was going to put a sign up in his business that said, all proceeds for wedding-related business go to Focus on the Family. I thought that was pretty clever, right? So basically, they're making you support, and you're making them support, right? I thought that was pretty cute. But of course, what that does is mean big old target. Right, and it also means if somebody comes and says, "All right, I'm going to challenge you. I don't care if I get Focus on the Family. You got to bake my cake for my wedding, and you don't agree with it." But there's also other things that I recommended he do. For example, "Have you ever rejected other wedding related or wedding, you know, any other business?" And this is the case with Jack. He doesn't do Halloween cakes. He doesn't do crude bachelorette cakes. But if they need a record of that, right? There's a reason that Hobby Lobby did so well on the HHS mandate thing. When Hobby Lobby laid out, here's how our faith influences our company, it's top to bottom all the way through. It's not just they're closed on Sundays and they fund the Bible Museum. It's how they do minimum wage, how they do employee and benefits, it's how they do their culture building. I mean, it's what's around their store, what they sell, what they write, how they spend their corporate funds to do, ads in the newspaper every Christmas and Easter. I mean, there's dozens and dozens and dozens of things. So that's, if our businesses aren't legitimately Christian in how we run them, and then we suddenly want to say no to gay and lesbian cakes, it's going to be really hard for us to justify, right? If you treat people poorly, if you are out to make a dollar. In other words, hopefully this will help the Christian community get consistent.
Yeah, I was wondering if you had any thoughts on the alliance of Conway West and Candace Owens and what its potential effect might be on politics going forward.
Kanye West and Candace Owens? I expected a lot of questions. I did not expect to be asked about Kanye West in this particular crowd. The Candace Owens thing, I think, is a lot more important. I think there are a lot of those in the African-American community that are questioning kind of the worldview that they have been kind of imposed upon by those in the progressive and the left. I don't think it's across the board, but I think there are more people than we think of, and she's speaking to that group, and I think that there are hearts and minds that can be won and hopefully will be won, particularly on the issue of life. Abortion rights in America have always been a targeted eugenics program against African Americans. Margaret Sanger was a racist, period, and that story needs to get out. Kanye West, to me, is an example of another problem in our culture, and that is what I call celebrityism. It's Neil Postman's amusing ourselves to death. We are really guilty of this. So a celebrity comes down on our side and we run over to them and say, good, they're one of us. But why is that more important that Kanye West is on our side on an issue? And I'm not even sure he's on our side on any issues we actually care about as Christians, other than he's on Trump's side. And he, certainly not with any sort of articulate clarity or deep. Here's the thing. Again, below politics is a culture that worships celebrity. And a culture that worships celebrity will always choose style over substance. It will always choose looking good over being good. And it will always be distracted from things that really matter. And if we run and jump on, I mean, the thing is Kanye has nothing significant to offer to America in the case of political discourse. And if suddenly we think he does, because he did a couple tweets for Donald Trump, that says more about us than it does about Kanye. That's my take. I think we need to be smarter. That's all. Does that help? I think Neil Postman's book, Amusing Ourselves to Death, is the most important book of cultural analysis that we've seen in our lifetime, written in 1985. Just read the introduction. And so I'll be honest, all of that's being shaped by Neil Postman, because Postman proved that the real threat to America was not government control, it was becoming a trivial culture. In other words, it's not that the government's gonna ban books. It's that we're a world that no longer wants to read books. That's the real problem we face.
This is Illinois Family Spotlight. More of John Stone Street's responses to questions at the IFI Worldview Conference after this.
Hello, I'm David Smith, the Executive Director of Illinois Family Institute, a state-based Christian pro-life and pro-family public policy organization. I want to invite you to join us as we seek to be salt and light to a dark and rapidly decaying culture. You can do that in a number of ways. For example, you can join our email list to get timely alerts and great cultural commentaries. You can like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, listen to our podcast, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can attend one or more of the special events and forums we host in different parts of the state. We do all these things to encourage and equip Christians in Illinois. You see, we need you to help us fulfill our mission to boldly bring a biblical perspective to public policy. Our faith requires us to be bold, speak truthfully, and love our neighbors. Join us. Visit IllinoisFamily.org to learn more. Again, that is IllinoisFamily.org.
Americans have been traveling down the health insurance highway for decades. But lately, it's been taking us to places we don't want to go. For Christians, it's hard to know which road to take. Or is it? Samaritan Ministries provides a different direction, a biblical path for their members to pray for each other and share financially in each other's medical needs.
This idea that Samaritan has adopted from the book of Acts should permeate all parts of our lives, not just health sharing. We, as a body of believers, are living out New Testament Christianity. This is what God intended for the church.
Do you believe that you need an insurance company, or do you believe that God will provide your needs? And there are people that you've never met before who are going to pray for you and meet your needs. There's another way.
Looking for a new direction for your health care? Visit us online at SamaritanMinistries.org.
Thanks for joining Illinois Family Spotlight. During this edition, we're offering some of John Stone Street's responses to questions at the recent IFI Worldview Conference. Mr. Stone Street is the president of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. His latest book is A Practical Guide to Culture, Helping the Next Generation Navigate Today's World.
My question is on identity politics. I've never seen identity politics the way it is so prevalent here in the United States. And my question is, how do you combat that when some people choose to identify themselves by such superficial means? Mm-hmm. Sometimes very superficial, whether it's the skin color or whether it's sexual preference. Sometimes maybe not so superficial, but not quite something solid.
Right.
And so much so that it's filtering over to the Christian church, where Christians are also falling into the trap of identity politics,
oh, yeah.
and how best to combat that?
Right. Well, gosh, that's a big old question. I'll try to answer it in 3 hours or less. it is the question of our day, and it's where postmodernism has taken us. So now identity politics is so narrow, and identity is so connected with autonomy, like we talked about in the very first session, if you remember that, then that you know, what it means to be whoever is to have a 75, you know, adjectives and, you know, whatever. Some are racial, I think some are legitimate. And then part of that, too, is it affects things like education. So I don't know if you followed what happened at Evergreen State University, where a liberal evolutionist was basically threatened with his life because he said something that they deemed politically incorrect. And the students took over the campus, threatened the administration, and said, you'll give us these grades, and you need to listen to us. We saw something very similar after the shooting in Parkland, I mean, to a group of students. And I think, you know, great for students who are heroic and they want to, or, you know, who are courageous and they want to step up. But what messed the whole thing up is when they said, we survived this shooting, we're now experts on gun control. They actually said that. Well, no one believes that because you survive cancer, suddenly you're a PA, you're a medical doctor, right? I mean, none of this makes any sense. But it has to do with this autonomy. I say what is, and you have to believe it. You have to obey it. So how do we do it? Number one is we don't do it by ignoring real grievances that have actually happened. Does that make sense? So sometimes this stuff reveals. I think, for example, the hashtag MeToo movement. We have an issue right now going on with a major Christian leader, Southern Baptist leader, historically, who has said things that are really indefensible. Now, they're being taken to a whole new level, like things often are, because of identity politics, because of the victimization that happens. And I do think there's some real problems, for example, where in the next political election, I expect we'll have dozens and dozens of false accusations. I think there's going to be a temptation that maybe some women will cave to, which is, I regret that sexual experience. I wish I hadn't done it. And I can kind of get out of it by accusing someone of sexual harassment or rape. The problem is if we look at that and then turn around and say that there's not a real problem with the way women are treated in our society, and that there's not real issues with sexual harassment, and there's not real issues with, you know, in other words, the problem is when we let this stuff become politically divided, and because we don't want our guy to get in trouble, that we then pretend like, we have to call out the drunk uncle, is what I say. You say, well, what do you mean by that? Well, we're really quick to call people on the left evil, and people on the right, we kind of tolerate, after all, they're part of the family. It's like the drunk uncle at Thanksgiving, right? He's part of the family. But when the drunk uncle starts molesting the girls, you actually have to stop it. And we have to be willing to call out people on our side as well as their side. We're not going to get anywhere unless we can do that. And that's a really important thing. It doesn't help us, for example, to say, well, I don't think right now that many African Americans really understand the situation. They've been captivated by the political system. That doesn't mean there weren't unbelievable historic grievances, and the way not only that slavery, the idea of slavery itself, but the way slavery was done in America and what Jim Crow specifically did, you know, has multi-generational impact. An institution that intentionally divides the family is an institution that creates social havoc for generations. We can walk and chew gum at the same time, folks, right? We have to. We don't have to say, because I'm glad Trump is better on religious freedom than President Obama, that, you know, it's okay that he paid off a porn star for having an affair. We can say character matters in a candidate and religious policy matters in a candidate. And we're going to have to do that across the board. And your question with identity politics, we've got to do the same thing. We can acknowledge real grievances. The other thing is, I just want to help us remember, and I think there needs to be more creativity here. Identity politics is the way it's done now is based on an understanding of identity that's small, shriveled up, pathetic, and it devalues people. We've got a better answer. So we can't just oppose, we also need to propose. We can't just oppose the way identity politics are being done if we don't find new and brilliant and beautiful ways of showing out what it means to be human. Classic example dealing with the LGBT community. Right? One of the issues of the LGBT community is they've tethered human dignity to sexual orientation or sexual inclinations. Talk about thin. It's even way more thin than, you know, I think any sort of, you know, excesses based on race. And by the way, identity politics on race happens with white people and African Americans and I mean, it happens across the board. We're all tempted by it. We're tempted by it maybe in more conservative ways as white men, you know, but it's still a problem. Sorry, that was a little tangent, but I thought it was important to say. But the LGBT stuff, there's nothing akin to race with that. Nothing. It's not akin to race. It's to pretend something that doesn't exist. It's just not. It's not the same as race. So it's so small and shriveled up. And yet, we often, so the real problem is that they've mistaken deep-seated inclinations, feelings, passions for identity. And we say it's not, and then we make comments or we treat them as if the most important thing about them is that they're gay and lesbian. Do you see the inconsistency? We say the most important thing about you is that you're made in the image and likeness of God, but the way we talk, the way we treat them, the way we may choose not to relate to them is icky. In other words, we treat them like that's who they are. So part of that is our ability, too, to figure out ways to love people and to treat them as made in the image of God as well. So there's not a formula. I wish there was, hey, here's three steps to defeat identity politics, right? I mean, the other thing is send your kids to get PhDs so that they can become the next generation of college professors. Because we need five or six college professors. Seriously, we need five or six. We need, gosh, a dozen or so college presidents to put a stop to this nonsense. And of all places where this is happening, this is actually really good news. Colorado Boulder. Like, we were the source of crazy, right? We were like Berkeley of the Rockies. And right now, every year, they bring in a conservative scholar, give him a distinguished chair, and let him speak in the name of diversity. I hear that there's some Christians in the administration making that happen. So let's get some more people in those spaces.
Can you speak about Facebook and its effect on politics? My husband is a local elected official. The most difficult thing we face are Facebook comments and being bullied.
Yeah.
Is there a resource? Because on a weekly basis, we are praying for wisdom as to how to respond or not respond. And it's the worst part of being a public servant is Facebook right now.
It's your husband that's a public servant? Like, stay away from it. I mean, in other words, you in particular. Keep the, you know, it's just, like, my wife doesn't get on my public Facebook page or my public Twitter feed because, you know, and I don't tell her about the hate mail that I get. And I'm sure I don't get as much as other people. But it's like, why am I going to, you know, tell her? It's somebody that doesn't matter. But this to me is another revelation of a deeper problem. This to me is the same question as the Kanye question, okay? So we're wrestling right now with whether there was collusion with Russia. First of all, whether, you know, the Trump administration colluded with Russia. Secondly, whether to influence elections. But more importantly, whether Russia interfered with our elections at all. And of course, if a foreign power interferes with our election, that's a big problem. We should always try to stop that, right? I mean, that's never a good thing. Here's the thing that I think some people have missed. Can we all just stop and think for a second how Russia decided to influence our elections, right? I mean, so you have a group of people over there on the other side of the world who have hostile intentions to America, and they sit there and they get together and they think, how can we influence the election? How can we make America do what we want it to do? I know, memes. I know, Facebook. Like, they didn't rig voter machines. They didn't put out a Manchurian candidate that we know of. They posted a bunch of social media posts. Like, we should be insulted, except it worked. Like, a lot of people believe fake news. Paul prayed for the church at Philippi that their love would abound more and more in truth and in all discernment. And I think there's reason to be on social media. It's a wonderful tool in a lot of ways. But there's some of us probably that need to stop and ask, can I abound more and more in love and in all discernment there? And if the answer is no, then we got to be willing, I think, to turn it off and to shut it down. We certainly limit it for our kids, right? Because we know what sort of thing it has. If it poisons their soul, it'll probably poison ours as well. I wish I had kind of a strategy for it and how to do it. We face the same things, and we ask our families not to look at it because it doesn't help them. You know, it doesn't add anything to their life to know that some random guy who probably lives in the basement of his mom's house at age 46 and eats pizza every day for breakfast thinks that I'm a something. You see what I mean? It's like, I don't know who this person is. Maybe they have a legitimate opinion. Maybe they don't. Maybe they're Kanye West, just without a career. You know, it just doesn't, it doesn't really help. So
I'm an African and a Nigerian. I just want to appeal. There's nothing like an integrity of word. What I have learned today is so much that I'm going to take much to some of my friends and my family. But my appeal here is, do you or have you ever thought of taking this kind of quality of word, quality of message to any part of the African? Summarily, what I'm trying to say, is there any plan for such kind of expansion of this kind of ministry over there that can help rescue some souls? God bless you.
Well, amen. It's a part of trying to discern the Lord's will in terms of where we go and where we don't. My church actually is part of a Nigerian body. It's one of the churches that came out of Africa, where Africans sent missionaries to America to recover some denominations that became neo-pagan and Buddhist. And so it's kind of it's close to my heart. And having met Bishop Oko and some others that are in Nigeria, and the wonderful work they do, we'd love to do it. Right now, I know there's a lot of wonderful ways to. The good news is the dissemination of this sort of teaching and information is really easy because of the internet, right? It can all go there. So anything you'd like to share or push out, or if you have any ideas, please let us know, because I would love to be able to do that. We also have people that go through the Colson Fellows program. We have two from the Netherlands this year. We've had some from the Dominican Republic. We've had a couple from Asia. And it was funny. I was speaking at an audience over in Grand Rapids with the Acton Institute, and it's a very diverse crowd there at a program they have every summer. And a young man came up to me and he said, I listen to you every day. I'm like, really? Where are you from? He said, Kenya. I said, really? Like, that's so cool, you know? And so maybe some of that's possible. We can work on that. So I'd love to hear any ideas you have. But thank you for that passion.
All right. Thank you so much, John Stone Street. John Stone Street at the Illinois Family Institute's 2018 Worldview Conference at Jubilee Bible Church in Medina, Illinois. John's book, A Practical Guide to Culture, Helping the Next Generation Navigate Today's World, is available at breakpoint.org, Amazon, and at Christian bookstores. Our thanks to the leadership at Jubilee Bible Church for hosting the IFI Worldview Conference. Until next time, God bless.
Thank you for listening to Illinois Family Spotlight. For more information, please visit us at ifiaction.org and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. If you would like to email us questions or comments, please do so at feedback@ifiaction.org. Until next time, stay engaged and keep your eyes on the prize.